Welcome to the Ages of Rock podcast with your hosts, Bill Algie, Dennis Talbot, and Alan Tate. We are three guys who have one thing in common, a love of rock and roll. Our goal is to talk about all things rock. We hope you find this show intriguing, funny, and occasionally highly opinionated. Enjoy.
Ladies and gentlemen, episode number 200. We have a special guest. We'd like to welcome to the show Tim Ripper Owens.
Yeah, you know what? Let me do this too before we start. I need to put my... I'm going to be driving down the road in a second here because I have to multitask. When you have kids, you got to multitask and do everything.
We have all been on that ship.
We understand.
Well, I got grandkids and everything, but my daughter just called and said, hey... So, all right. We're already on there. Good. But that's how I do my interviews. It's really funny is I try to usually work them around the kids' work or school schedule. So when I come get them at school, I'd sit in the car and do interviews.
You know, Tim, that's funny, though. You know how we've talked to other people, and it's funny how it is. You know, the rock star life is not really the rock star life. It is kids, grandkids, family things, honey-dos. It's very interesting, and we like to see that part of the side of people like that. It's kind of neat, actually.
Well, it is, and that's, you know, you can't, you know, you travel, some of us travel so much that we like to come home, and this is what we do.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah, it was funny, there was a post of a picture of Paul Stanley the other day at Costco. People were freaking out.
All right. Hey, my kids... It's really funny because my kids will be with me. This just happened. I was at Macy's and my son was like, he got something separate. He's 16. And then I went up and got something and the guy looked at me and this guy was older too. And he said, you're Ripper Owens, right? And then he's like, hey, I love your stuff. And my son was like, this is kind of crazy. You know, you're kind of at Macy's and you're like, the guy just says, I don't get it as much as someone like Paul Stanley because that's Paul Stanley. So I might get it. He probably gets more than I've had my lifetime in one day of shopping at Costco.
And there were all kinds of pictures. He looked I couldn't tell if he was really unhappy that somebody snapped a picture, but it was kind of funny.
He had a lot of toilet paper in his.
He did. Yeah, it was funny.
You know, you cannot go out in public like that and expect people to leave you alone when you're that high of a status, I guess.
But that's kind of, I don't mind that stuff. My thing with me was I always looked like everybody else. I mean, I look like the normal neighbor. You know what I mean? I have this look that's just kind of, when you have long hair, people are always like, oh, yeah. You know, that it's, even if they don't, listen, I'll go to an airport with my band and these other countries. And the band or even America, wherever, and the band, people always go, oh, look, and they'll point at them, right? And I'm like, no, I'm actually the guy. They'll come over to me. Who is that? I'm like, I don't know. You work for him? I do. Yeah, I do.
Cool. Like all the Rodney Dangerfield of rock metal.
Yeah, I always try to think, what do I gotta? You know, do I have to tattoo my face or something? Because it is. I'm like, I used to say I look like the neighbor. You know, hey, there he is. Looks like the neighbor. But now my kids are like, yeah, you must not anymore, Dad. Because everywhere we go, people are coming over at the mall and or, you know, wherever. So it's kind of cool. That's the best part. I don't mind that. You know, unless you're eating and you're in the middle of it, people want you to get up, take photos, it kind of gets annoying. But the good part of the job is things like that. You know, when you get recognized in public, you're like, yes! And not for murder or stealing something. You know, it's kind of cool. It's like, you do it, you're like, hey, my first reaction is, I didn't do it. I didn't take it. Like, no, we know who you are. I'm like, okay. Woo! You got me for stealing them socks over there.
All right. I don't know her name.
Yeah, I always did.
All right. Well, man, it's great to have you on the show. So talk about this Three Tremors gig. That is pretty cool. I'm really interested in how did the three of you guys get together?
Well, it was Sean Peck is the one who started us off. You know, I did a lot of touring with like South America. I did a tour with Blaze Bailey and Udo and Mike Mascara. We did a little all-star singers tour. And then I did one in America with Jeff Tate and Blaze Bailey. But that was always like a, you know, doing our history of our music. and some covers. And this Sean's like, hey, I want to do this, but I want us to make a record. You know, I want it to be us doing a record and an over the top record that's got a lot going on. And so, you know, Sean come up with this idea, and it was really great, because it's definitely you know, pretty crazy stuff.
I can tell you the artwork. It's interesting listening to the record and looking at the artwork, because it definitely goes together. The artwork on the cover.
Well, it is.
It is just, yeah. I was looking at it today on the website too. And I've listened to it before, but I was really kind of looking today before we did before we had you on. And I was looking at that artwork. I mean, that is just cool shit. And then when you really look at it and the music, it's like, yeah, that is 100% fits together.
Well, and he picked, you know, that's the thing again, is Sean wanted to make sure that it was done right as well, you know? And I think that's what's cool about it. You know, he got the guy who does the artwork for Dio and stuff like that, and you know, got him to do this art. And it's totally pro, you know, and it's over the top stuff. Everything is over the top. The music, the vocals, the art, everything is like really hits you. And the artwork, you know, you look at the solo versions we just put out, and the whole package that's there is incredible.
Yeah, that's pretty cool too. I mean, so what made you guys decide to do it like that? I mean, I don't think that's ever been done before. I've never seen anything like that. So, and explain how that process worked out.
Well, here's the thing. It is funny because when I recorded the record, Sean sent me the vocal ideas. He said, "Here it is," and I got it. I just sang each song in its entirety from start to finish. I sang it. I might have left out a slow part here, or he might have added something later on that I didn't put in, or I just forgot to sing something. So that's what he got. And when he got our versions, they you know, produced it and did it then. They mixed it up and said, here's, let's do this. Let's listen to that. Okay, let's have Ripper sing that verse or part of this verse. And, you know, so that's how it was done. It wasn't like we sang the parts on the record. It's not like we just went in and sang those parts. That was kind of mixed. So it did make it hard to go tour because we didn't know what the hell we were singing. You know, it's like it was like looking at a script. So I got to sing there and there, but we did the whole record. So Sean all of a sudden one day went, man, you know, Ripper, this version of your song, your version alone is killer. Or man, Harry sang this song and it's really, really killer. So he said, maybe we should do solo versions. And that's how it started. At first, he's like, maybe we should do separate CDs or something. Maybe his first thought was. And he's like, no, we got to do them all, you know, three CDs and make it a good, you know, money for people, not too expensive or anything. So, yeah, it was a great idea, and I don't think anything else. Sometimes I think maybe it would be cool if we did do, if I would have went in and resung a few things or added some high notes or added some low stuff or just change things around. Even the slow parts, like I said, I forgot to sing or didn't do. I said, you want me to redo? Let me sing it. You know, let me just go right in my studio. Take me a second. He goes, no, leave it out. I mean, that's what makes it different. You know, that's how you did it. That's how you recorded the record. So, you know, Sean's, you know, thinking how to do this, and it's great ideas that he's had. I mean, like I said, the artwork alone and the presentation of this solo CD is pretty amazing.
So how was the European tour?
It was good, man. It went well. You know, it's great. But kind of, you know, because I'm used to touring solo, so my name's out there and things like that, you know. So when you tour solo, it kind of, you know, it helps because they push my name and whatever. This one, you're really pushing. You're mainly trying to push the Three Trimmers name. Even though it has us there, you're trying to push it. So people might, you know, might not want to come out. So it's a new thing to push. But the crowds have been great. And, you know, the American tour, the first American tour was great. Now that we're going to be hitting America again, it's going to be even better.
And how many stops you got on this new American tour? I saw the thing the other day. It's quite a few shows. It's going through the whole summer.
Yeah, well, we got it broken up. We have six shows. We got three in next week I leave for Texas. We got like three in Texas and three in Florida. Right. Six shows in a row. So we're flying from Texas to Florida to do a show. So we'll probably that'll be a crazy one. And then we come home and then we fly to about a week later, we fly to the UK to do about six or seven shows. And then we come back and go back out. I think it's towards the end of March we do America, which it's a pretty crazy one then. So we got a pretty good haul on that one. And any of these dates, you obviously can go to the Three Tremors pages or mine as well. I mean, I always tell people the best way to find out what I'm doing is to just go to Facebook or my Instagram page or my Twitter page. Befriend me on all those pages and you'll find out. Some people still don't get that idea because they'll send me a personal message. Listen, they'll send me a personal message on Messenger, on Facebook Messenger, and say, so what have you been up to? And I'm like, you're on my Facebook. I mean, you can't read what I'm up to? You know? It's like they want me to personally invite them, like give them a call and say, hey, Mike, guess what I'm doing? But it's right there. You know, one person sent me a message on Facebook Messenger and said, so what have I been up to since I left Judas Priest? I'm like, I don't know what to tell you. I usually just tell them things like I've been in prison.
That was just yesterday, right? Or
no, I did this thing. I did this thing.
That's crazy.
This other thing. And then, you know.
I mean, I've done so much that I'm, you know, I mean, hell, even in the last 3 months, I've been all around the world touring. But, you know, the best way to find out, my line usually is I just look at them and go, just Google me.
Right.
You know, all you got to do is Google and figure out. But just go on my Facebook page, friend me at Twitter or Instagram, and then all the Three Tremors dates are on there or the Three Tremors site, you know, all over the place.
Hey, tell you what, Tim, take Judas Priest out of the equation and take your newest project, your Tremors, Three Tremors out. In between those two times, what has been your favorite thing that you've done? I mean, you've done, like I said, your resume just goes forever, and you've done so many different projects with so many different people. What has been one of your, what is the highlights of, in your mind of what you've done?
Probably being the lead singer in that prison band.
The prison.
Okay, never mind. The prison. I was like, you got us. That was good.
Man, that went right over Dennis's head. That was great.
Both of us.
I'm going, wait a minute. I don't remember that.
It'll come back. Just, you know what? I don't know, man. You got to think about it. I sang for Yngwie, Iced Earth, my solo records and the Hologram and Beyond Fear. And last year I did Spirits of Fire. I put out three records at the same time, Spirits of Fire, Three Tremors, and A New Revenge. Absolutely loving the A New Revenge CD, which is probably one of the best reviewed CDs I've done. And it's more of a hard rock, kind of straightforward record. But, I mean, I think it's just a whole body of work. I mean, I tour the world solo. I go to South America. I have a band there that I use. I go to Europe. I got a band in Ireland I use. Touring America with my friends here. I mean, it's really, and I probably put Three Tremors right at the top because it's something different.
That's good.
And I've done so much, that when people ask what's a favorite thing I've done, it's like, I think I'm probably just going to say that the best thing that I've done is probably being able to make music my living. You know, I don't have to go, work a 9-to-5 job. I can tour the world doing music. So I guess that's probably the best.
No, I mean, like I said, I was going through a little over the last week or so when we knew you were coming on. I've been going through everything, and I'm like, and there was like stuff that I didn't even know about. You know, with you and Richard Christie with the Charred Walls of the Damned. You know, that stuff.
Yeah, three records of Charred Walls of the Damned, and they're fantastic. My last one, I did a couple years ago, is my favorite. But what phenomenal CDs sure. I mean that was, and that one was pretty well known because of being on the Howard Stern Show and everything. But yeah, I mean,
right.
I mean, Lars Ulrich heard heard Charred Walls of the Dam, went on the Howard Stern show and talked to Richard about it. So next thing you know, we're doing a festival because, you know, Lars and Metallica invited us to come play it. So it was kind of a cool thing. But, yeah, I mean, it is. And that's, some people say to me, why don't you do one thing so I can keep up with you? I'm like, well, then I would have to work a 9-to-5 job. You know, then I would, one thing's not going to pay my bills, you know, and I'm a little late in the game to be going out and getting a job that is going to pay what I'm used to getting in the music world by doing all these things, you know. So I kind of have to stay busy doing, and that, it is kind of fun because, like I said, 3 different CDs last year, and they were all 3 different. And then in months before that, I released a CD with a band called Tourniquet. So that's another CD that I have out. But, you know, I try to stay busy and do different things.
That's really funny because, like I said, we've had some people that are friends of ours that have been on here, you know, Brent Fitz, Todd Kearns, you know, and they'll say, you know, they'll tell you too, you know, I'm in like 7 bands right now, you know, and that's how they keep busy. I mean, they keep busy. Once one gets done with a project, they're into something else and got multiple things going on. And that's the way you have to hustle, you know.
That's what we do for a living. We're musicians. You know, if I could get in one band and they're going to, you know, pay me what I could get paid, well, then I could sit. It's not going to happen. I mean, to be honest, I couldn't even live off of what, but now this was the mid-90s, but I couldn't live right now what I made when I was in Judas Priest. I couldn't make a living. I'd have to make more money. That, you know, you get older, you get more bills, and I was in band in Judas Priest in the mid-90s.
Right.
Where the heavy metal was dead. So I even looked, and they treated me fair and paid me fair, but I couldn't make a living off of that now. I mean, I was in my 20s then. I'm in my 50s now, so it's not going to happen.
That's so, you know, thinking about how these kids are coming up nowadays with, you know, we've had this discussion on our show before with other guests, you know, how do bands make it today, new bands? I mean, I don't know how they sustain themselves for any long period of time.
Well, I mean, it's hard. And, you know, listen, there's handfuls of bands from each generation. I mean, you go back to the 80s, there's a handful of bands that still kind of do it and made it and continued to make it. It's not like it's a ton. And they could still do it. I mean, there's a lot of young bands that are coming out and tour. But you've got to be young and you have to be ready to not make money for a long time. And I think that's the thing about it. You know, it's not like you're going to do it. And you better be ready to come crashing down in a little bit, too. You know, you might make some good money at it, but eventually it might not be the same money. You know, it might be less, so just be ready to do it. But, then, you know, they could still do it. I mean, that's the thing. It's like us, you know, I've watched a local band around here in Akron called Red Sun Rising, which actually
Oh, yeah. Now.
But they... Yeah, they toured and played like crazy, but they were workaholics. They did it right. They promoted themselves. And then I'm certain they made some pretty good money. You know, eventually that's not going to be exactly the same. I mean, are they going to be around 30 years from now? Could be, because they were awful dang good and worked hard enough. But you never know. So you just, but you still go at it, and they did it right, and they're so good. And but it's hard. I mean, there's just, you know, listen, bands from my era, they disappeared for a while, like in the 90s and stuff. You know, any band, even bands like Death Angel or Testament or all the hair rock bands, a lot of them just totally disappeared. And, but they were, had a pretty good base of what they started. They were all able to come back again. And, you know, Rat wasn't playing places or whoever. I mean, Bang Tango wasn't going to be getting many gigs in the 80s, but they were able to come back in the 2000s and start touring again and doing stuff. But they kind of had a base. But all these young bands, I mean, you know what? You could do it because when you're young, you don't have the bills. It's pretty simple. Like I said, I looked when I was in Judas Priest, and I didn't have nearly the bills of what I have now. I mean, you end up doubling and tripling your bill. And listen, I live in Akron, Ohio, so they're not, I can get quite a bit for my bills. It's not Los Angeles where,
yeah,
you know,
insane.
Yeah, we're all,
foot.
yeah, we're all like Midwest Indiana people. Same deal. You know, a house, you know, what I have right now is $1 million house in California. You know, but it's not nothing fancy. You know, it's just ridiculous.
You get a 3,000 square foot house with a half an acre or more.
Yeah.
If you're even in the city somewhere, and you're gonna, it could be a couple $200,000-$300,000
easily. Yeah.
You know, I mean, in a newer one, and put that out there, it's like, holy crap, that's gonna make. Yeah, I mean, that's just how it is. So I'm kind of lucky that I have that as well. I'm lucky that for me, I do a lot of guest singing on people's CDs, and I'll promote it on social media. Every now and then I'll go, hey, I'm time off. Anybody wants me to sing a song on their CD, let me know. Because I know as a fan of music, man, I would have loved if Rob Halford or somebody would have been able to sing on my record. You know, so I'll charge them a very low fee, go in my studio, and be a guest on their record and sing a song. And it's another advantage of nowadays that you can just jump in your studio and do these things.
I was just saying that, you know, you can stay in Akron, you can stay in Ohio, and you can do everything you can, you know, via the internet, you know.
Absolutely.
Your home studio is probably as good as any of the studios you went to in the 80s, you know.
Well, it is, and it is a big difference, because in the 80s, or I still go to some bigger studios, and they go, yeah, this microphone is $10,000. I remember I was recording my solo record, and the guy goes, you hear the difference between my microphone and yours? And I said, yeah, I don't hear a $9,800 difference. I mean, it's pretty close. I mean, it is funny. I mean, it's still nice. You know, like some records, I'll go to a studio and do it, but you could do so much in it and in your own studio. And listen, and your studio is like being a singer. You don't need much. You know, I got a little Pro Tools and a little thing. I just go to desk and throw some stuff down and have hardly any equipment. So it's not like I got to have all these compressors and this and that. And I'm a singer. I got it pretty easy.
Well, your vocal range too is still, I mean, off on that Three Tremors record is phenomenal. I mean,
I still have to do that. I always wish I would have probably been a country singer. Then I wouldn't have to worry about it too much. But, you know, then I could just, you know, gargle my way through it. But I
Yeah, the yodel a little bit, though. That's the only problem.
That might get me. That actually might get me. But, I kind of have that where I'm going to always have to do that. But it's, I try to keep the range. I'm always going to have to sing the songs that I've written and sang on. I don't like to cheat too much and sing things, you know, different. So, I mean, it might not be the same vocals, power and vocals as I had in my 20s and 30s, and probably even low 40s, but I've learned to do it different ways and just make sure I take care of it.
Yeah, that's been a pretty big discussion going on recently too, with, you know, different people that are still out there touring and sound like crap, and you want to see those guys, you want to see them do really well, but then on the flip side, it's like, ooh, man, it's a challenge.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, it's different though. I mean, obviously, if you're a brain surgeon and you get old and your hands start to shake, you definitely can't do it. But being a singer, you can continue to sing it even if it doesn't sound great. You still want to get up there and do it, you know. And I think the only difference is some people who start sounding bad don't want to own up to it or even say it. They just kind of get up and do it. But, I mean, as a fan of music, you still want to kind of see them try to get through it, as long as they're trying their best. My thing is always try your best. And, you know, I mean, you're not always going to be able to do it, especially if it really makes me mad if it's easy kind of singing and you can't do it. Then I'm like, dude, that is easy. How, you know, if it's, you know, Maiden and Dio and Priest and some of these other things, you go, okay, that's tough stuff. I get it.
Right.
But when I see someone that's pretty easy vocals and they got to sing it really low and they still can't sing it and they're butchering, I'm like, man, that's pretty easy. I don't know how you can't do that. But, you know, vocal cords aren't guitar players. I mean, guitar players do slow down and stuff, but you have to shut your fingers in a car door not to play good. Singers just wake up and you have something wrong with your voice. I mean, your vocal cords just change. I've done nothing but take care of my voice way more than I did when I was younger. And even doing this interview, I feel the strain on my voice. I feel it tightening up and getting different because talking just does that to you. So vocals, singers are different. You know, they can take care of it, but it just changes.
Exactly. That's a good perspective.
So as a singer, who are some of your influences?
Well, definitely Ronnie Dio was probably up there. I mean, Halford and Dio were my two favorites growing up. Bruce Dickinson, Chris Cornell is a huge, huge influence of mine. Soundgarden, John Oliva from the band Sabotage was a huge one. And even David Wayne from the band Metal Church back when I was young. Another one that was a big influence was Joey Belladonna from Anthrax. And I think the reason was he had a thrash metal band that had this singer that was more like Journey. And he, you know, had that kind of vocals going over thrash. So I was like, man, that's pretty cool that guy's singing over thrash metal. So, but, you know, me, big ones were you know, Halford Dio and Chris Cornell probably were the biggest.
Did you ever get to sing with Rob Halford? Did you guys ever do anything together at all?
We didn't. I just was talking about that in another interview I just did a little bit ago, and I think it'd be fantastic. You know, we're friends, and you know, I'm still friends with the Priest guys, and I'm friends with Rob, and I think it would be cool. I mean, I've always been, you know, special him being such an influence to me, but also being friends, I think it'd be just an amazing thing to do that, without a doubt. I think it'd be great. I've always said, I just said it in the last interview, you know, doing something like the song Under Pressure, just something about, you know, because Bowie and Freddie Mercury are two of my favorites. And I think doing a version of that would be so, so amazing. But yeah, I mean, I would always love to sing a song. It would be probably top one of the list, you know, up there of the coolest things I've ever done in my music career, definitely, for sure.
Tim, take us real quick. Just for my own thing, you know, going from tribute band to playing with that band. I mean, that first gig. I mean,
yeah,
just kind of, I mean, it has to be. It had to be one of those points where you just went, "Holy shit!" You know.
Well, it was, and I'll tell you what. And it's funny because it's not even as much a tribute band because. Listen, I was only in the tribute band for a little bit, and that was to try and get my original band to play more. Right. And Judas Priest wasn't together, so this agent said. But I think it's more of the fact that in the 80s, now I didn't make them until 96, so I wasn't the stalking type fan that I was, you know, what I did in the when I was in high school and when I was in the 80s, Judas Priest was the only band for me. There was a point in my life where, you know, the photos on my wall were Judas Priest, and everything I lived and breathed Judas Priest, you know, and that was my favorite. So I think that was the thing. These guys were my idols and my heroes in music, and so going there to meet them and audition for them was surreal, and it's really crazy because they made me feel so much like family from the start, the way they acted and the way they treated me. That it felt like family. And that's, I'll tell you, I've always told this story and I've always said this about it. When I lost my heroes and my idols because we became friends, you know, I looked at them a little bit differently. They were like family. They were my best friends, my family. That's how we were. So I lost those heroes that I never thought I'd meet. The posters on my wall, they became different. So it's kind of funny. I mean, I know it's a good thing, but it's still kind of strange because you never look at them the same. But they were, it was an amazing experience, and going on stage with them and being around them, it was, you know, so great. You know, they treated me so well and we became such good friends. It's pretty amazing.
So kind of, cause it's kind of like with us, you know, the people we've met, you know, with this, our 200 show, we've met quite a few people that we've looked up to, but what you do, you find out over time. And when you meet these people that they are, I mean, they are your heroes and they seem like these super people, but they are just people. And then once you start talking to these people on a level to where, like, you know, with us, you know, we'll sit here and talk to these people online and just start bullshitting with them and stuff. And you just find out they're just average Joes. They get up every morning just like we do. They put their pants on. They have kids. They have troubles. They have this and this and that. And that's one thing I like about this is you do find out you get more of a personality of your rock heroes.
Well, it is that. You know, you'll run into a few that are you know, jackasses. I mean, you always get a couple.
Right.
And that's – but you also run into people locally that are as well. So anybody has a job is going to run into that. Right. I mean, that's the thing. They are – everybody's the same. And I always have to be told – you know, my girlfriend loves to tell me because I always think, oh, my God, so-and-so did this, and the fans said this, and I went somewhere, and this guy did that. And she always has to remind me. She's like, you know, you are – one of those, you are that guy, you know, you do realize that people look at you like that, and you are, you know, when you talk about other celebrities or other band members, she goes, you do the same thing. I go with you to these places and I see how, what people do to you and how they act and they're freaked out and how you treat them and you're nice and you do this. And she goes, that's what you do. Sometimes you just think you are the kid from Akron all the time. She goes, but you really are, you know, a celebrity here. You go. So she always laughs at me because she's like, you don't even get, sometimes you don't even get who you are. You always put these other people, you talk about them. She goes, that's you. You know, Ron and Dio said it to me from the start. First time I met him, I said, dude, Ron, I'm huge fan and you influenced me and it's amazing. And he goes, you know, Tim, you're just like me now. You're just like me. You're one of us now. That's who you are.
Wow.
So that's, you know, and I get it that, but it's funny that, you know, just because I do here, and there are certain times you do get it, but my girlfriend loves to laugh at me when she's like, yeah, you just don't even understand sometimes, do you? I'm like, okay, maybe, I don't know, but it's pretty funny.
What's good to stay humble. Keeps you on the right track for sure.
Well, it's also with your, first of all, it's how young you get, you know, people like Yngwie or something. It's hard for these people because they became a virtuoso changing the face of guitar playing at such a young age, and then you get the wrong people around you, and people, there's a lot of artists that I get somehow how they are. And it's the same with sports people. I mean, listen, there's probably more rude sports people and actors than are even as musicians, but I understand that some people are so big, and it's hard, man. You get Ozzy's and Metallica's and all these different people, it's like, man, they are just the top of the mountain, and it's hard because you can't do much, so you're gonna things aren't gonna always, you're not always on the, listen, you're not always a normal person around some people. That's just how it is. It's, you know, my thing is my upbringing. I'm from Akron, Ohio. I'm still here, you know. I still have the same family and friends. You know, my girlfriend didn't even know who I was when we met, and then somebody messaged her one day and said, what are you talking to this guy on Facebook for? You mean, you know who he is? She's like, I didn't really know. We first started talking. We weren't even officially dating yet, but kind of talking. And they're like, yeah, this guy, she's like, hey, she messaged me. She goes, you didn't tell me about you. I'm like, oh, well. You know, so now, you know, just the other day, she's like, she's a paramedic. And she goes, yeah, hey, we were going to Columbus a couple hours away to have some dinner with some friends. And she goes, we got to stop by the Coventry Fire Department to say hello and sign some autographs. A couple people want to meet you there. And she's like, it's kind of funny, you know, these people just always bug me. And so she's still like, I still don't know what he does.
That's funny. That is funny. That's, no, cool. Like I said, it's a good world. And like I said, we've been lucky. Like I said, everybody we've had on our show so far, and including you, we've always had a good experience with. And, you know, there are going to be those times where you're going to catch a star on their bad day. You know, they could just be having a really shitty day and you catch them wrong. And, you know, hopefully that's not going to be one of those things. That's the worst thing you're going to ever do is meet your hero and it's not going to be. They're not going to be who you want them to be, you know.
Well, I will interject something here pretty quick. We have had two musicians who agreed to be on the show, and neither one of them answered the phone on the day that we were supposed to do the interview. And it turns out they were in the same band, so I don't like that band anymore, and I'm just going to leave it at that.
Hey, I was close because I didn't answer your first call because I was trying to end another interview I was doing. So I'm thinking, Thank God I didn't. I answered it, or I would have been disliked as well. Oh, that would let you know that it is that most people are okay, you know. Yeah. But again, you get, you know, you're gonna get. Everybody has bad days, and that's what's bad. I'll read it every now and then that someone thinks I'm a jerk or I didn't talk to them. Like I pretty much talk to everybody. I can't figure out, but there is a day where maybe you're walking out the door and you're just like, "Dude, I got to get out of here."
Sure.
Well, now I follow you. I follow you on Twitter, and I see some people trying to troll you. So some of your responses back to those, I think, are pretty funny.
Well, listen, I do. I don't try to spit. People are just in this day and age. People, first of all, are just. There's so many people who are filled with hate that if they don't agree with you, first of all, I don't even really talk politics, but people always can think they have me figured out in my life, figured out and who I am. So it's kind of funny that they always come at me, but they actually send you personal hate messages saying, I hope your family dies. And these are people that don't agree with what they think you are. So them not agreeing will in turn around and say, you know, you're a horrible person and I'll never buy your music. And they always say funny thing like, Rob Halford, you're not, and I hope you die. And it's like, you know, that, who, you know, 10 years ago, nobody did that. Nobody, it was really a different era 20 years ago, 10 years ago. You didn't, just because you didn't agree with someone, you actually just didn't agree with them.
Right.
And now on Twitter, people will do that. And I'm always kind of joking about it, though, on Twitter. I don't actually. You're right. You're 100% right there, because I'm always like taking, you know, making it funny, you know, or whatever. It's always, and some of these people that trolled me and hated me, we became friends because they're like, even though we don't agree on stuff, they're like, yeah, you're actually pretty cool, because, you know, but other people just send these messages and it's like, oh my, I want to copy them. Sometimes I do, but I just got one the other day and I was just like, just out of the blue. I don't even know why. I didn't even say anything. But it was on Facebook, and it was like, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you.
Well, you know, I think that one of the, and I've mentioned this on Facebook before, you know, people hide behind their screen on their phone or on their keyboard or whatever, and they say what they want because there's no fear of repercussions that they're not going to get punched in the mouth. Because the things that they say you on Twitter, they would never say to you right to your face.
Well, they don't. And like I said, now it's, they feel like they could just say these things if they don't agree. And I just, like I said, politics, whatever, left, right, middle, I don't care what you are. You know, I mean, I always say politics should be common sense. Everybody can have their opinion, but I would never send someone that kind of hate messages or, you know, just because I don't like someone, I don't go, I will never speak to you again. Or I will not be able to speak to my family because my parents have a different political view of me. But that's, we all have that. You know, we've all grown up and had different views. But, you know, we didn't used to say, you know, I grew up a Democrat when I was a kid. And I didn't look at Republicans and go, I hope you die. Or the president. I didn't look at the president who I didn't agree with. I mean, I didn't like one Republican, and the next time I didn't like a Democrat. I never posted hate messages or things. And now it's like the world is like, it's in music as well. I mean, people just, they don't like something. They just send these messages. Like you said, they hide behind it. But no one used to have a little bit. You didn't have to agree. You had it. But now it's just like they, you know, I mean, oh, it's just crazy. Some of the messages I get, it's like, what do you, I mean, what would possess you to send me a message, call me a Nazi, whatever. I couldn't be as far from everything they always call me. And it's just like, where do you even get that? And that's how it is.
Well, all I know is whenever I was a kid, and if I ever said things like that, my mom, dad, I got my ass beat. So I think a lot of has changed with the younger thing generation, because they just don't. I mean, back then we had morals. We had we were taught a way to do things, and that's just the way it was. And you were polite, and you tried to be nice, and you said you know the P's and Q's and all that bullshit. And I think today people just, they got this mentality, like you said, they get these keyboard warriors, and they want to just do what they want.
They do. But first thing they look for, the first thing people look for now is something to complain about.
Oh yeah,
that's all it is. Look at the news, and I mean, look, we all have to pee in the same restroom now. It's just one of those things, you know, everybody has to, you know, we want to, everything has to be equal, the same, and then, or, and then it has to be, no, we want to parade. I mean, it's just how the world is now. Nothing can be just, and listen, I see it, but it's just like, man, every day it's like someone's complaining about something. What's going on? And I'm like, can anybody just not, don't look for, we used to look for good things. I think that's the difference, even though we might maybe put blinders on, but people look for positive things. And now they look for even how to make a positive thing negative. Yeah. And it's like that in music. And it's like, but the way people think it's okay. I mean, if I complained that I don't agree with somebody, an artist, a writer, a musician, whoever it is, that people will send me those hate messages and with death threats and everything. I'm just like, well, who, I mean, what's that do? That just pretty much shows, most of the time it just shows what I complain about. Cause I'm like, that's, I complain about things and then they just pretty much make my point.
Tim, if you could do, I mean, you've done so much and played with so many people. Is there somebody that you would like to play with or sing with or, well,
I would have liked to have played with Dimebag for sure. I mean, I think him and I would love to have, I would love to play with Tony Iommi and Geezer Butler. I think those two right there would be like the perfect thing for me to sing. So yeah, I've Zach Wilde, I think would be killer to hear his chops and me singing. But yeah, I mean, I think doing something with Geezer and Tony Iommi would be just hearing those riffs. And I was such a fan of the Sabbath records and all of Black Sabbath that I would be like, oh man, it'd be great.
That's cool. That would be cool. That would be
so
cool.
You said you did some stuff with Dio. So have you done some stuff? Did you do the
Dio's Disciples is what it was.
Yeah. Dio's Disciples. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I did that, and I did the hologram tour in America last year, which was very successful and very amazing. I mean, the whole show, it's so big, and even just the photos of Ronnie and everything that's going on stage is incredible. But you know, I was friends with Ronnie. Wendy's like managed me, and we go out and been friends with his bandmates forever. So it was kind of nice to be able to do that. I just love celebrating him because anytime I sing Ronnie or get to do it, it's just something, there's something about it that's just pretty amazing.
That's cool. All right. So hey, let's get back to the Three Tremors. Can you talk a little bit more about the tour and we'll get this thing rolling.
Yeah. You know, listen, this is amazing. And to be able to go, you know, anybody can get the dates. I always say go to my Facebook page, Instagram or Twitter. You'll find my page on there. You know, if you go to Instagram or Twitter, especially, I'm always posting the dates. But, you know, Tim Ripperone's official on Facebook is that page. But go like those pages and then the Three Tremors pages. You'll get all the dates and all the info. And, you know, it's really a great show. It's a fun show. It's a heavy metal show. We have a good time up there. We play some songs from our history, but, you know, mainly the Three Tremors. Go out and buy the Three Tremors beforehand so you know what the hell we're singing. And, you know, it's a good time. You know, we'll be all over America.
Cool. Well, man, thanks for being on the show. We really appreciate it.
Really do. 200
yeah,
episodes.
Thank you.
Yeah.
200. Yeah. And, 200, and yeah. Listen, anytime you got my phone number now. So, call me anytime. We'll chat anytime. Talk about something. It'll be great if I could celebrate your 201st episode. So that'll be even better. Then we'll be like how far we've gotten since the 200. Yeah.
We'll call. We'll have him on next week. We'll just have a, hey. It's our favorite guest. Tim Ripperone.
It's our fourth host.
I might Mr. even. Yeah, I said I'll be the next host of the show, and it'll be great.
There you go.
My career's come a long way.
Be there careful. We've turned this show over to a couple people before, and it goes off the rails.
Yeah. You can already probably tell with me we might be in trouble.
That's the best part.
Those are the best episodes.
Those are the best ones.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, good.
We've been doing
this one's good because it's your 200th episode. I'm not wearing any pants, and we're celebrating. So it's the most amazing show ever.
Strangely enough, neither am I.
We're so all on video.
There actually. We go.
Yeah. Some of us are on video. That's why we only ever see us from the waist, from like the chest up, because God only knows what might be happening below that.
Well, now I did have to get up and go get one of my dogs because she was barking at the wall or something. So everybody got to see my pajama bottom. So there's that.
That's better than what we've seen before.
I don't do the video when I'm not wearing pants, but I do Braille. So just so you know.
You do Braille when you're not wearing pants? Or
yeah, I figured, I don't want to do video.
That's awesome.
That's pretty good.
That's awesome. Thank you so much, man. Thank you.
Yeah. On that note, hang out for just a second. We're going to get out of here, but we want to chat real quick. All right, you can find us on all of the normal Ages of Rock podcast venues, Spotify, and all that kind of stuff that Alan usually says, but he can't talk tonight because he's muted. So it was a gift from God. All right, we'll see you all. Thank you for hanging out with us for 200 episodes.
Woo-hoo!
It's been awesome. We've had a great time, and we can't wait to do 200 more. And our special guest next week is Tim Ripper Owens on 201.
Thanks for listening to the Ages of Rock podcast. If you haven't done so already, be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, like us on Facebook, and most importantly, tell all your friends. Remember, you're never too old to rock. Until the next episode, peace out, folks.